Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. And Daniel, it's good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr.
I'm doing well, and I wish the world was doing better, and there's a few problems that we want to talk about.
Yes.
And hopefully we can find something good to say about it. We want to talk about Iran, which is something we have obviously visited many times with the sanctions being put on and the agreement, the nuclear agreement. We actually endorsed that and said, yes, yeah. Anything that claims that they're going to build less nuclear weapons, that's good. And the United Nations was involved. IAEA agreed to do the inspections to see if they were living up to it. But our administration didn't want any part of it. The new administration said, we can't trust them. They're really working on nuclear weapons. So therefore, we're getting out of this instead of taking a gamble on peace.
Yeah.
You know, said. So that we got out, our government got out of the nuclear agreement. And about a week ago, you know, our administration, the president said, oh, no, they're cheating and we have to do something. And the sanctions we put on, they really haven't worked, so we have to come down hard on them. So they put new sanctions on, make sure they couldn't sell any oil. They really want to punish Iran. But, you know, just yesterday, the day before, IAEA came out with a report, another report. They follow up routinely to find out what the Iranians are doing. They're allowed in. They're allowed to inspect. And basically, I think most people consider them pretty honest with what they do.
Yeah.
Okay, this announcement says, IAEA reports shows Iran continues to honor nuclear deal. That should be good news. But 1 week ago, Trump is convinced, no, they're cheaters and we can't do it. We have to punish them. And he put on more sanctions a week ago. But we also, you know, hear words that the sanctions that he has put on aren't as successful as he wants. And that's probably the reason they added some. So it's in flux. But we know that they haven't suffered quite as much, so we'll have to wait and see what our government is going to do because you know they're not happy with Iran, but they're never happy with Iran, and the president has a couple advisors that aren't very trustworthy for presenting the case for peace.
Well, you know, there's a direct pipeline of pro-regime change think tanks in D.C. They're all very close to AIPAC, the Israel PAC, and they have a pipeline of people in second-tier positions in the Trump administration. The top tier with Bolton is very close to these people, too. So they are obsessed with regime change. They've been obsessed with regime change. They tell us that this time it's going to work. It won't be like Iraq, which turned into a disaster. It's going to be fantastic. But Iran has every incentive to remain in compliance with the deal, because the Europeans and the Russians and the Chinese assured them, we're going to try to get around these U.S. sanctions. They're doing their best. They're looking for alternatives to the SWIFT process. So Iran, it's in their interest to try to live up to the standards, even though the U.S. has claimed that they don't. So they are found in compliance. The Europeans are trying. But as of right now, it is very difficult. There have been some waivers given by Trump to some companies. But as you point out, Bolton says we're going to squeeze them down to zero, not a drop. He said we're going to squeeze them till the pips squeak, is what he said in Asia this week.
Yeah, this is the whole thing. One of the items that our government was complaining about is they have evidence that the Iranians were trying to circumvent the sanctions. You know, Big deal. Wouldn't that be a natural thing for them to do? But I think, you know, because Trump had this position on oil that for the election and for his benefits, he wants oil prices, low prices. So he works real hard to cancel all the oil getting out of Iran. So then he begs and pleads with the Saudis, you know, to pump more oil. So he knew there was trouble with the oil price, and they put on, so they removed, they gave some waivers to eight countries in trying to manipulate. He's actually a price fixer in oil, and it hasn't gone quite the way he expected.
Well, that's why the whole Khashoggi thing is such a nightmare for Trump, because he can't squeeze the Saudis over the fact that their crown prince is perhaps a psychopathic murderer, because they need that oil to be pumped because they also want to sanction Iran. So it's this whole idea of sanctioning, of isolating, of being aggressive, and it seems to bounce back and slap the U.S. more than anything. Now, Trump is in an absolute bind when it comes to his Mideast policy because he is so aggressive. He leaves himself no way out.
And it doesn't do much good for what we're trying to do in the world, and that is get along and trade. And it shouldn't be just to run the world. And one of the things that this does, as well as when we deal with Russia, is they do try to get around it, and they try to use something else. There's a tremendous incentive to knock down the dollar. And there's evidence, continuing building evidence, that they're having success there. So the Iranians are doing this, and they're working with others. And I think that will eventually backfire on us because, that'll be a big deal if they really replace or just cut it in half the amount of times they use the dollar on international transactions. That would be very painful to us. Interest rates would go up, and we'd have a lot of price inflation from it.
And they're doing exactly the thing that will make that happen. But, you know, the question is, what does the U.S. want? You know, this administration has been consistent in one thing, which is attacking Iran. What do they want? What do they expect? Iran was part of the deal that we negotiated in good faith, and we pulled out of it unilaterally. Well, Pompeo, the Secretary of State, gave a speech on May 21st at the Neoconservative Heritage Foundation where he laid down the law. Iran has got to do these 12 things or they're going to get it. And the whole thing is a total farce. I mean, the only way to summarize his speech is Iran has to completely capitulate, total submission to the U.S. is the only way out for them. And the 12 points that he made that Iran has to do are completely ridiculous in many cases. First of all, they have to abandon any domestic nuclear abilities. No fuel production, no low-grade uranium enrichment, which they're allowed to do now. Essentially, they're at the mercy of the rest of the world when it comes to fuel for their nuclear energy reactors. It also, his third demand, falsely claims that Iran is limiting the IAEA inspections. Totally untrue, but it's a false claim. The seventh and ninth demands or a call essentially for Iran to break ties with Iraq and Syria, which are its two allies and neighbors. Can no longer talk to them. Stay away from them. It's absurd. And, of course, the big thing is that Iran is not allowed to develop ballistic missiles. That was never part of the JCPOA agreement whatsoever. And those ballistic missiles could very well be used as defensive missiles, like every other country in the region. Look at it. Israel has a couple hundred nuclear weapons. So Iran is the only country in a bad neighborhood that's not allowed to have a defense. It's totally absurd.
And so their reaction should be logical and understood to be very logical. But, you know, when we attack a country militarily and we do the bombing and sometimes innocent people die, like almost every time we do it.
Yeah.
But they soften the report and they say, they don't say, well, we killed 100 innocent people at this wedding or anything like that. Oh, they say there was some collateral damage. It's not a real thing. But what I see here with Bolton and Pompeo is probably a serious shift in language. And it reflects a dangerous a shift in attitude towards civilian, because they more or less just admit that we're going to punish them. You know, and then, of course, that is what Madeleine Albright said. You know, 500,000 kids died from our function.
Whatever.
You know, and here they actually use this as a threat, you know, that we're going to starve. And Tillerson was the same way when he was talking about North Korea. And we were going to punish those fishermen and make sure they suffered. And it was always, you know, civilian. It happens. Civilians always get killed. But to be so blatant and admit that's part of the policy, you know, it's I often thought about, you know, what Madeleine Albright said, you know, that it wasn't a big deal to lose 500,000 people as collateral damage. And then they wonder why there might be an incentive to hate Americans, you know, I imagine, well, a matter of fact, it was in the news. That report of her statement circulated through the Arab world. Everybody knew what she had said. And it's that attitude that exists. So as we weaken with our currencies and weaken militarily, I think there will be a lot of people remembering, you know, how aggressive we have been with putting on sanctions, putting on tariffs, bombing people, trying to bribe people. You do what we say, we'll give you more money. So I think this is, if you're a neocon and you're looking at what's happening right now, a neocon should be very discouraged because I think they're getting a step. But we should worry because what do? They become more aggressive if they think they're losing. They'll you know, try to overcome it, and we still have the power, we still have the money, and we still have the dollars to bribe people with. So even if they get knocked down and people circumvent, believe me, the neocons aren't going to give up easily.
And, you know, when they want to bully another country, they start talking about the rules-based international order. You've got to follow the rules-based international order. But what you've just pointed out, this really, this blatant targeting of civilians with sanctions, blatant admission that civilian misery is the goal, that is an international war crime. It's recognized in international law as a war crime. So the hypocrisy of going on and on about the rules-based international order, or you're blatantly violating some of the most important pieces of international law, it's breathtaking.
Now, we've been pointing out the shortcomings and the back, how it backfires and the unintended consequences of what happened with the sanctions on Iran. But there's another story out now, something very similar and is related, is what's going on with the Russian sanctions. We've been dealing with them ever since Crimea and the accusation that the Russians are poisoning certain individuals, that they controlled our election, all these things, more sanctions and more sanctions. But this article says, Russian sanctions, why isolation is impossible, meaning our attitudes and what we're trying to do, we're not going to isolate them. And yet there was a pretty good article in Financial Times that explained, which was pretty impressive, of what they're doing and how many people are cheating. That is, they're cheating us. So that is, they're going around what we're telling them to do. And there are actual companies, oil companies, making deals in Russia, and they're supposed to be punished. But it's in their interest to do it. So it's a way, it's amazing that some of these oil companies and all, at first I thought the oil companies wouldn't do it and they would bow because they don't want to be punished by our government. But they're feeling their oats right now. And this is something to show that they are not doing that well. They're using euros, you know, when they have to, sell oil. And so I think they said it's long-term going to hurt the dollar and everything else.
And this article, we both noticed, is pretty remarkable. Financial Times, hardly a radical publication, you know, if anything, very establishment, very mainstream. But it's just a very interesting and informative piece on how the sanctions designed to isolate Russia have had the opposite effect. In fact, country after country, most of them, our allies, are flocking to Russia to buy their S-400 ballistic missile defense system. Turkey, India, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, China. They all want this piece of equipment. They don't care that the U.S. is yelling at them, Turkey, don't you dare buy this. Saudis, don't you buy this. They said, no, we want it. So it's having the opposite effect, with Russia.
Right. And I think that if I try to put myself in a place of where Russia is right now, and I think this technology, evidently, even with the difficulties with sanctions, and they aren't the richest country in the world, they don't have a navy like we have, that they still have ability to design technology, and evidently this is a pretty good weapon, this S-400. And It's to me is a little sad that they're competing with us to be the world's arms merchant. But you know, you can understand it too, because you know they've been shortchanged with sanctions and they can't run their economy like they would if they had no sanctions. But they are competing with us in the sale of weaponry. To me, it would be nice if a country would get their technology for defensive weapons, save the money, and help their economy, and not have to be a competitor in selling weapons. But I don't know what we're going to do about this, because right now it looks like the S-400 is good for the Russian economy.
And it's not just their military. This is what was remarkable, in my opinion, about the FT article. It talks about a few of, the bill of particulars is pretty astounding. First of all, push Russia and China together, something that people thought would never happen. Henry Kissinger, I guess he's not in his grave yet, but he's rolling around somehow because his whole thing was to keep them apart. Pushing Russia and China together, something they thought wouldn't possible. But more importantly, pushing European and even American businesses and companies toward Russia. The article points out Nord Stream 2, the Germans are cooperating with the Russians on that. The French company Total has taken a 10% stake in a Russian liquid natural gas project. BP owns 19.75% of Rosneft, which is the Russian state oil company. Germany building a factory to build E-class Mercedes near Moscow. And last week, the article points out the Italian deputy prime minister told a visiting Russian delegation, quote, "In 2018, we do not need sanctions. We do not need troops. We need dialogue. We need friendship." And finally, Boeing is opening a plant in Russia. So the whole idea of sanctioning Russia is not working. They are not being isolated. We are being isolated. We're missing out on the world economy. That will make us poorer. It's already making us less free. These guys are putting us in a bind, putting us in a corner, and we're all going to suffer for the neocons' fascination with aggression and an aggressive interventionist foreign policy.
Very good. You know, the retaliation against us when we do military operations against a country is well known, and we call that blowback. And blowback is when they come back to get us, not on equal terms because they don't have the same military force, but they will use terrorist attacks, and it will be a consequence of what we have done. And of course, there's been blowback from against the Iranians ever since we went in there and changed their country in 1953. But what we're talking about today, I wouldn't put it in a category of blowback. I'd put it in the category of unintended consequences for the economic interventions that we're doing. And this this to me is very impressive. I think it should be very encouraging. The world is big. It's going to be very hard for one country to be the dominant force, economically or militarily. Eventually, the empires are brought down. And I think that's what's happening. We're seeing the crack there. And all we have to do is see these expenditures be interfered with a major downturn in our economy, because we can't pay for what we're doing now. In a downturn, it's going to be much tougher. So there may be a good sign in this. I just wished we would wake up before the suffering occurs, because when you go through these corrections, the middle class just gets hurt more, and they're already hurting. So the sooner we wake up and say, that what we should be doing is talking about freedom and prosperity and markets and sound money and move in that direction. That, of course, is what we hope for and what we talk about here. I do want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.